there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 341. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a fun show we have for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Jamie Pierce is a comedian who has performed all over New York, Los Angeles, and all throughout the country, from venues from San Francisco to Baltimore. He was selected as a top 10 national finalist for the Underground Comedy Festival's Emerging Comics at the Laugh Factory, and has performed in both the New York Comedy Festival and the Los Angeles Comedy Festival. In addition to regular appearances at all the major comedy clubs, Jamie has been featured in Homo Comicus at the Gotham Comedy Club, Funny Gay Males at the Duplex, our favorite, the Duplex, Gay Bash at Caroline's on Broadway, The Gay Mafia at Hamburger Mary's West Hollywood, and most recently, Jamie co-headlined the Michigan LGBT Comedy Fest. He's got quite the background in dance and Broadway, which we're going to talk all about, and he is the host of Theatrical Hysterics at 54 Below, featuring Broadway's favorite headlining comics. Right this second, he's hanging with us. Jamie, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, Ken, thank you so much for having me. And I have to apologize right away. I've been a little under the weather. And, I mean, I feel fine, but I've just got the proverbial frog in the throat. I hope that the deeper voice is going to make me sound more masculine, but it just sounds like Brenda Vaccaro, the Michael Douglas years.
I love how right from the start, much like many Republican presidential candidates, you're dialing down expectations. It's very exciting.
Well, I don't want to set the bar too high because... then I'll hit my head on it.
Well, we have so much ground to cover, Jamie. Are you ready?
We have so much to talk about. I love your show. I love the theme song. I love the guests. I'm just excited to be on the same show with Kelly Rabke. You know that Joseph was my first Broadway show.
I did not know that.
Not that I was in, that I saw.
Okay. So what I learned about Kelly Rabke, so I saw Joseph back in the day. My boyfriend is obsessed with Joseph and Kelly Rabke to a degree that I didn't know that people out there, they're like Joseph fanatics out there. Are you one of them?
Well, it's a very Utah. I'm originally from Utah. Joseph is a very Utah show.
Okay.
So I understand. I mean, I've seen thousands of productions of Joseph throughout my years. That was the best one, and Kelly Rabke was the best narrator. So
wow.
I think that his obsession is justified.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. Yeah. No, anytime we get into a tiff, which occasionally happens apparently in relationships, he just plays the clip where I gave him a shout out with Kelly Rabke on the air, and everything's fine. Everything's fine between us.
And that just neutralizes the situation immediately.
Immediately.
Oh, that is genius. I need to find one of those.
It's great stuff. It's great stuff. All right. Well, we will start with you as we start with all the funny people who have come on the show before you over the past 7+ years with the same question. Where does Jamie Pierce find the funny in this world?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I have found the funny. Well, what I mean by that, I'm not really one for jokes.
Okay.
I've never been a very good joke teller. I've never been a very good joke writer. And I often find that the things that are just very commonplace to me are what the audience will really respond to. So I'll just think I'm telling a story about my life, and they'll find it hilarious. And it's usually the things that traumatize me the most. So basically, I find the funny in things that traumatize me.
Well, as you mentioned, and I saw this in your background online, quite the background in Utah. Tell me all about growing up in Utah.
Well, it's not as exciting as it sounds because I am not Mormon. I wasn't raised Mormon. And I think that that's always what people want to hear when I tell them I'm from Utah. And this is, I mean, no one's more disappointed than me in this fact, because as a comedian, like, that'd be great in terms of, you know, a wealth of material. People are just very intrigued by the Mormon religion in general. But then I tell them I'm Episcopalian and they just lose all interest.
They lose it. They lose it. I'm a gay Jew from Jersey. I know nothing about these Utah Mormons. I know nothing.
I mean, they're fascinating, but I really was, you know, looking from afar. So I might know more than the average person, but people really want, you know, to dig in deep with that. And as do I. Again, I wish, you know, the material would write itself if that were the case. And I'm probably, you know, more well-adjusted because I wasn't raised Mormon, you know. But who wants to listen to a well-adjusted comedian?
No one. No one. I found that the answer is no one. Now, a background also in ballet. Now, I worked for a year at the New York City Ballet, and that was easily 15 years ago, and I'm still a little traumatized. That ballet world is pretty hardcore.
It's not for the faint of heart. That is for sure. And, you know, I was a ballet major in college, and I danced briefly for a ballet company, and I actually got kicked out because I kept dropping the girls. This is an honest to God true story. And not intentionally. I didn't mean to drop them. I was too weak. And when I drop the, like, it's not good for either one of our egos if the girl gets dropped. Like, nobody feels good in that situation. I try to pass it off like I was, you know, just trying to keep them humble, you know, just trying to let them know who's boss. But I didn't mean to do that. So so that was the beginning and end of my ballet career. And then I went straight to musical theater after that and became a chorus boy, which is a safer haven.
I'm still on the part where you drop the girl. I figured that's like a metaphor. I dropped the girl in ballet, but no, you really did.
It wasn't because I wasn't interested. It wasn't because it was only just because I was not. It's a very athletic. I mean, it's a sport, ballet more than any other dance form.
Oh, yeah.
It really does require a very high level of athleticism that I clearly did not have. So that was that.
Didn't you want to just say sometimes, like, you drop the girl and you're like, I'm sorry, that one was just too heavy. Except you don't say that in the ballet world.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not good for either one of our egos.
No.
Because I'm weak and she's heavy. Right. Which was not the case. I mean, she's like 80 pounds.
Well, can we talk real quick? We actually talked about this years and years ago. We had Tyler Engel, who now is a principal with New York City Ballet, but he was on the show when he was a soloist years and years ago, and we haven't talked about it since then. There's quite a push and pull, from what I understand, of men being in ballet. That whole, okay, I'm gay, for the men that are gay. Not all of them are gay, I've learned. But for the men that are gay, with some of those folks in the ballet world thinking that being gay and being masculine are mutually exclusive. And I remember years ago, Tyler saying that was something that he really struggled with. Is that something that you encountered as well?
I do think that's a misconception, absolutely, about male ballet dancers not being masculine. But I have to, again, provide the evidence of the tremendous amount of athleticism that is involved with
Huge.
That. I mean, not only the lifting part, which we've established is difficult, but also the turning and the jumping. I mean, It's the ballet dance. Male ballet dancers can jump as high as basketball players. They really can. I mean, they have to. And so I think that gay or straight, it still requires a very significant amount of masculinity to pull that off, to be effective.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember talking about that irony that, and even when I worked for that one year for the School of American Ballet, I mean, those boys were far more in shape and athletic than any football player, basketball player out there, but still, because of the art form, I remember them being teased mercilessly in high school for, oh, well, ballet, it's just not masculine, which is crazy given what you have
they
to do on stage.
It.
Yeah,
they should put on, and even if they wanted to try, you know, the pointe shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, even for the girls, it's not, again, it's not for the weak.
Yeah.
It's not for the weak, as we've learned firsthand.
I feel like I also think that maybe being a chorus boy, not for the weak. Is that wrong?
I don't know. I mean, I really loved it because you got to be on stage, you got to perform, but the risk was so low.
Okay.
I mean, the stakes were low. There wasn't a lot of expectations on you. I mean, you know, I've been doing stand-up now for 11 years, and that is something that the expectations are very high. You know, it's just you alone on stage, and if you don't deliver, you have no one to fall back on. You have no one to blame it on. It's all you, which means you get to reap all the rewards as well. Of course, whenever the risk is high, so is the reward. But when you're in a chorus, it's great because you're not the star of the show. You can be in the background and be messing around, which, of course, we wouldn't do.
No, never.
Utmost professionals.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to, you could get away with a lot more being in the chorus. I found it a lot of fun. I mean, there's definitely, again, expectations on you in terms of, you know, your physicality. I did a show for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, which is an organization here in New York, and we did a show in Bryant Park, and it was 4,000 people on an August afternoon, and I was wearing just a Speedo.
Huh.
Just me and maybe 10 other guys in Speedos. And this was, again, this is like my early 20s. I was a younger, more petite individual.
It was like a year ago, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh, you're very sweet. But there certainly was that, you know, again, there was an expectation physically that needed to be met. But it's easy to meet that when you're 22.
Right. I don't know that I've ever worn a Speedo even under something. So that's a whole different world. It's a whole different world. Is there one Broadway memory that just jumps out at you like, wow, I was on the stage for that?
I mean, that one. That one really was kind of, because I remember the moment, and I'm very impressed that as a 22-year-old I was able to grasp this, but I said to myself before it happened, I said, okay, here you are. You're in New York City. It's Bryant Park. There's 4,000 people out there. We were doing a number with Karen Ziemba, Tony winner.
Oh, yeah.
Tony winner, Karen Ziemba. And my parents were there in the crowd of 4,000. And I looked up, and there's the buildings and the taxis. And I said, this is a moment you need to crystallize, because you're never going to have... I mean, you may have something like this again, but this is the first moment, and this is a pretty spectacular moment. So I think that that's the one that really, in my memory, I hold near and dear.
What was the song? It couldn't have been like, I Want to Be a Rockette. What song were you singing as that was, you were in a Speedo?
Appropriately, we were doing Heat Wave, Irving Berlin's Heat Wave, which I feel like there's another pop song called Heat Wave, but that's not the one. This was Irving Berlin, and it was Karen and her boys, and it was a very hot August afternoon, and so it was a very true portrayal of the lyrics.
Nice.
in that particular moment.
Nice. And now you do conference calls with Karen Ziemba every Tuesday night. I love it. Look at the connections. It's the connections. Now, somewhere along the way, you said, you know what? I got some funny stories. People respond well to me. I think I'm going to give comedy a try. How did this happen?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I even said I have anything funny to say. I really was just kind of playing around. One thing is very interesting. When you're a dancer, you don't often speak.
Right.
So you don't really have... your brain is not necessary, or certainly your thoughts and opinions aren't required, and rarely are they asked of you. So I was basically just exploring, you know, what would this be like to talk, essentially. And I never thought it would be a career. I never thought I would do this as a forever in front of like a paying audience. It was more just me going to an open mic and just kind of, again, playing around. And then I kind of took to it. I liked the creative freedom. I liked being able to be all aspects of the performance. You're the writer, you're the director, you're the performer, you're the producer. I liked that creative control and being able to have something to say and given the platform for expressing it. Now, if you want to talk about something that's not for the faint of heart, it's stand-up comedy.
And oh, yeah.
It was pretty brutal in the beginning when I first started, and I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, the very first open mic I ever went to, it didn't even occur to me to come out of the closet on stage. It didn't even occur to me that was something I should do. And so I wrote 5 minutes for this open mic, and it was just the hackiest material, stuff about airplane food. I mean, it was terrible. It was just terrible. But again, I really didn't think I wanted to do this. I was just kind of saying, what would this be like? And I went on stage, and I did, you know, my 5 minutes, and it went fine, but, you know, certainly a star was not born that evening. And then I got off the stage, and the guy that went up after me said, hey, that last comic was homorific. And I thought, okay, I'm not fooling anybody. I should probably address this, the fact that I'm gay, and you know, make that kind of my angle. It didn't even occur to me, which I think is so funny now, because I wouldn't say it's the entire focus of my act, but it certainly is a perspective. And I didn't even do it in the beginning.
Yeah. I did it in my first open mic, actually at Gotham, but I maybe shouldn't have drank as much as I did. I think that was my mistake. I don't remember it that well. Yeah.
Well, you cannot drink. I find some people can't. I cannot drink a drop of alcohol because I'll forget what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I don't know if I just have that kind of brain that responds in a very foggy, fuzzy way, but if I drink, you think it's going to loosen me up, but I forget my set, and then I just say thank you, good night, and go to bed. Especially now in my mid-30s, I have 2 glasses of wine and straight to bed.
Oh, yeah, I'm there. No, those were my twin mistakes. I drank too much, and I don't know that it was the smartest idea to invite my parents to that open mic when most of the set was about them. It just didn't go well.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, let's do highs and lows. I love highs and lows. Give us one of those times that you were on stage doing comedy and you walked off and whether emotionally or actually pumped your fist in the air and just said, whoa, I just killed that one.
Always, always literally pumping my fist
nice,
in the air.
Nice.
It's never just in my heart. It's always, I always have that Rocky moment. After a good set. After a bad set, I curl up into the fetal position. But I remember the first time I did a big show out in the Midwest in Detroit. And it was for a gay show, which can, especially in my early days, performing for gay audiences was something was a skill in and of itself. I mean, that's something I had to learn how to do because they, as a gay comedian, they're going to make you work harder. I mean, performing for straight audiences is easy. You just be like, I'm gay. And they're like, oh, what a riot. That's all it takes.
Right.
But, gay audiences really want, that's their joke. So they're not going to settle for that. They're really going to want you to work for the humor. And so it took me a while. I didn't like it at first, but then I actually figured out how the gay audiences were actually a place to do material that they would maybe understand better than other audiences, a sensibility that they would relate to better. So my very first time doing, it was a gay show in the Midwest, which I thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster. And I had to do 30 minutes, and I was opening for Jessica Kirsten, and who's hilarious, if you're familiar with her work.
Yeah.
If not, check it out. And I just was setting it up to be in my mind that this was not going to go well, but I was being paid handsomely. I thought, well, I'll take the money and run. I'll cringe myself all the way to the bank. But it was fantastic. They received me so warmly. And what I learned was that I think there's something about New York audiences, gay or straight. They've seen it all, and they're so saturated with entertainment and comedy and all those kinds of things that sometimes if you go out into the rest of the country, into the square states in the middle, they're ready for you, and they're going to embrace you. And I remember that being a very triumphant moment of like, I conquered the Midwest, I conquered the gays, and I lived to tell. So that was a great moment.
I love it. Again, listeners, we are here with comedian Jamie Pierce. We have covered the highs. Is there one show that you remember that you're like, wow, that just did not go the way I wanted it to?
Well, there was this time, again, early in my career where I was booked at a strip club.
Oh.
And yes, and not like a Chippendales. Oh, no. Like a stripper pole.
Okay.
Venue. And when they called me up, I said, I think you have the wrong comedian. I'm pretty sure I'm not who you're looking for. And it must have been because I was cheap because I was like, are you thinking Jamie Kennedy, Jamie Foxx? Like, surely I'm not who you want.
Jamie Farr. We would take Jamie Farr at this point, folks. Yeah.
Totally. Because this was, a female. It was the Penthouse Club in Phoenix. Penthouse. And I had to Google Penthouse. There might not have been a Google back there. I had to ask Jeeves about what was the Penthouse Club. And I learned that because I'm not really their target demo. So I was previously unfamiliar with that particular venue. So I had to ask Jeeves what it was, and I found out that it was Penthouse Magazine Strip Club. And so, and they said, no, you're going to be great. But just an FYI, there are going to be lap dances going on during your set. Have a nice day. And, like, I was already, questioning the appropriateness of me at the Penthouse Club, but in light of this new information, I was afraid, because it's very difficult to catch the subtle nuances of my humor when there are, boobies in your face, to put it bluntly. So needless to say, I did not go over well at the Penthouse Club. And finally, like halfway through the show, I was like, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to get out of your hair. But if I were in your hair, it would look fabulous.
It would look great. Not as greasy.
Ran away.
Yeah, no. I feel the Penthouse Club. I feel like I used to drive by that all the time on the West Side Highway. And it's got like the Grecian columns and stuff. It's a very bizarre joint. I know there's tons of them across the country.
And they have a comedy night.
Yeah.
Bizarrely.
Apparently.
I don't understand. You don't go to the Penthouse Club for comedy. I don't think one would do. It's like reading Playboy for the articles.
I think it's going to be your niche. I think you're going to come full circle, and that's going to be, hey, where's Jamie playing tonight? Oh, at the Penthouse Club again, all the time.
I have unfinished business with you, Penthouse Club. I'm coming for you. I'm going to conquer that.
There's a feedback loop we need to close. Now, one of the things that we share in common that I don't get to talk about at all on this show, ever, is a little franchise called The Real Housewives.
Oh, dang it, sister.
Now, let's...
I know we share a fondness for Eileen.
I do enjoy Eileen. Well, let's back up a step. Are you a fan of all of The Real Housewives franchises?
Just Beverly Hills. And there's no rhyme or reason to that. I don't know why I'm only a Beverly Hills person. I just have, that's the only one that hooked me.
Wow.
From hello. I was like, yes, I'm on board.
Okay.
And that's the one I watched religiously, even though this season's a bit of a snooze.
May I introduce you to New York and Atlanta? Because you kind of have to pick those up as well.
I'm familiar with them generally. Like, I understand. I know the character. Yes, sure. Maybe I just haven't given it enough time. Maybe I should spend more time with those folks. But right now, my heart is in Beverly Hills.
Okay. Let's catch our audience up on Beverly Hills. Apparently, as gay people, we're supposed to like this woman named Erica Jane.
That is the expectation, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know. I don't dislike her, but I feel like she appeals to a specific type of gay man that I am not.
Yeah.
That I am not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm an Eileen man. Although this season, because last season, I when she was first introduced, I saw her as kind of like the wise observer with a great sense of humor. She seems a little more frenetic this season.
Yes.
She's walking on some shaky ground, and I'm concerned for Eileen.
I have so many questions that I feel like you can answer. Did Yolanda have Lyme disease? What do you think, Jamie?
Well, whether or not she had it, she gave it to me. Because as soon as I watched that episode, I had Lyme disease. I acquired Lyme disease through my digital TV box, or Munchausen syndrome. Maybe I caught that. I don't know, but I caught something that night because I had all the symptoms by the end of the day, all of them, which is not uncommon for me. I say in my act that I caught multiple sclerosis from watching the Lifetime Intimate Portrait of Terry Garr when I was in high school. So this is not unprecedented for me to have this happen.
I caught alcoholism just from watching Kim Richards, so I understand that.
No kidding, right?
These women.
I thought I had Epstein-Barr, but it was just alcoholism.
Yeah. I took one of Monty's pills, although he just passed away. I just read that.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. See, there's sad stuff, folks, on the Real Housewives franchise as well.
There's some real-life stuff that goes down. Absolutely.
It's crazy to watch. I'm just going to keep talking about this. It's crazy to watch Yolanda and know, oh, wow, that guy that you're with, David Foster, right now, you're divorced. So that's not good.
But that makes me happy because I see them interact and I don't like it. I don't like some of the things that he says and does. And so I find peace of mind in that.
Everyone's got to tune into the Real Housewives franchise. It's very enjoyable. When Bethany was on, it was like, oh, they're not going to know it all. I have listeners in Northampton, Massachusetts, that if it's not on NPR, it's not a thing. So they've tuned out at this point.
From the beginning of this show, when I mentioned Brenda Vaccaro, I lost all the millennials. So it's fine. I made a Brenda Vaccaro reference in front of an audience full of millennials the other night, and of course they had no idea who I was talking about. I got all indignant, and I was like, you need to know, Google it. Get out your phones. I'll wait. And then I realized they're millennials. They already have their phones out.
Exactly. At this point in the interview, we're down to one listener. It's the one gay bouncer at a penthouse strip club in Des Moines. That's my theory.
Who loves Erica Jane.
Oh, loves. Loves. Absolutely. He's like, oh, if I could just see a doubleheader with Erica Jane and Kelly Rabke, I will be in heaven. And it would be amazing.
Oh, my God. That's the remake of Baby Jane right there. But they were talking about remaking for a long time, and I'm sad that still in development or was put on the shelf, because I think that'd be a great show. You know who I think would be good in the remake of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Tell me.
Go with me on this. Lorna Luft and Rosalind Kind.
Wow.
Do you know who those people are?
I of course know who those people are.
Okay. I mean, is that genius casting or what?
I think it would make for a good NBC live musical.
I was just live tweeting Grease Live last night.
Now, I did not see it. While Grease Live was on, I was out in...
I won't give any spoilers.
Okay. I was in Philadelphia watching the Indigo Girls because I'm such a lesbian. So I was seeing them in concert. And so I missed all of the Grease Live. I saw all the live tweeting come through afterwards. Do I need to go back and watch it?
That's the dumbest question anyone has ever asked me ever before. Of course you do. Why wouldn't you? I don't understand the question, I guess. Maybe that's the problem. I don't understand what you're asking.
This is what I hear from my students all the time. I shouldn't be fazed by this response at all. I heard that Carly Rae Jepsen's song, not so enjoyable, the new one.
I did perhaps not change the channel, but I may have gone on to other tasks during that number.
Okay.
I may have. But yes, if you need to catch up on anything, Vanderpump Rules.
Oh, that's... Yeah, I'm there. I don't need to catch up on that at all. I'm pretty current.
Oh,
I'm pretty current. my boyfriend walks into the room and sees me watching these shows and screams at me. And just screams, you have a PhD. What the hell is wrong with you? And I don't have an explanation. It's just very enjoyable. It's good stuff.
I mean, sometimes you have to turn off that, incredibly, you can't fire on all cylinders all the time.
I think that I am. I am deconstructing this in a very cerebral way, so I stand by that I'm using my PhD as I watch the Bravo Network. I'm moving on to another topic.
There you go. I'm going to defend you on that.
Thank you.
If he asked, just have him call me.
Thank you.
Have him listen to this episode.
I will.
Remember?
Oh, I would kill to have him listen to an episode. Tell everybody about Theatrical Hysterics.
I'm very, very excited about this show that I'm hosting at Feinstein's 54 Below. Which, if you're a gay man, if you're a gay performer, that's like your Ellis Island.
Yeah.
Everyone passes through eventually. The show is called Theatrical Hysterics, and it's an evening of stand-up comedy featuring three incredible headlining comedians. And one of the things that makes the show unique is that all three are headliners, all three are comedy legends, and most importantly, considering the venue, they're all gay men with Broadway credits.
Nice.
They have high standards at this venue. And we had been talking, the venue and I had been talking about doing an evening of pure stand-up comedy, because this is a cabaret space and they usually have, Broadway musical acts come and perform. And there's so much comedy in New York. We were saying, well, what could we do that would make for a really unique evening? And I pitched the idea of having, these three particular gentlemen, who I will name in a moment, because not only are they amazing comics, but they all have Broadway associations, and I think would appeal to the demographic of Feinstein's 54 Below. And they have a great, kind of theatrical sensibility. hence the name.
Nice.
So we've got Jim David, who is an icon and one of my heroes, comedy heroes. You know, he was on Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. He's three-time MAC Award winner. He was in the Broadway production of Best Little Whorehouse Goes Public, the sequel to Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Nice.
I really hope he talks about, because I'm fascinated with that. So he's amazing. We also have Kevin Meaney, who's, talk about a comedy legend.
Oh, yeah.
HBO special. Yeah, right? Amazing. He's an Emmy Award winner. I think he's been on The Tonight Show like a dozen times. He was on Saturday Night Live. He had his own sitcom. So he's incredible. And then Rick Crome, who is not only a comedian, but also a Broadway composer. He's written a lot of theater. He wrote Musical, which is an off-Broadway show. He wrote the movie The Big Gay Musical. He's been nominated for Drama Desk Awards. He was in The Goodbye Girl with Bernadette Peters, which, again, I really hope they tell these stories because I need to know. So it's an incredible lineup. We'd originally called, I originally titled the show Show Queens was the original title, but we changed it because I didn't want people coming in thinking that they were going to get the, you know, cast of RuPaul's Drag Race. And actually the venue changed the title to Stand-Up Comedy : Theatrical Hysterics, just, you know, so there's no room for error there. And you don't think that they're going to, so you don't think it's a Sondheim review. I'm going to bring these three guys on and they're going to sing You Could Drive a Person Crazy in tight harmony. Although they could.
They could.
So it's going to be a great show. I'm so excited to be hosting it. And this is our inaugural show, March 9th. And then if all goes well, hopefully we'll run it again with either a new lineup or, you know, bring these guys back again. I think it's going to be spectacular.
Nice. Surely there has to be some sort of way for me to get a 54 below kickback, seeing as how many guests we have on the show who are appearing there.
I mean, why do you think I'm promoting it? I get like 60% of the door. Why do you think I'm singing the praises of my own show? They're such a great venue because they do highlight such amazing artists, both, you know, established artists. I've seen Patti LuPone there, Ben Vereen, amazing people. I've seen both of the Baby Jane sisters. I saw Lorna Luft and Rosalind Kind at 54 Below. But they also do a really good job of fostering new talent and new writers and new artists. So they're a great place.
It's going to be something to check out. Now, where can our listening audience go to learn all about the fun things that you are doing?
Well, you have to follow me on Twitter because I am desperate for Twitter followers. I really am. It's pathetic. My following is so low. Just because I try to engage. I tweeted Grease Live. I live tweeted Grease Live. I tweet a lot about football, which is very incongruous, I know. But I try not to do it too much. And football season's over now, so don't worry about that. But if you like football, follow me. If you don't like, I promise there's other content. So that's Jamie Pierce NYC is my Twitter handle. And that's also my website, jamiepiercenyc.com. All my upcoming dates are on there. You know, 54 Below. I'm also going to be performing at a Rainbow Mountain Resort in the Poconos. Is that where Dirty Dancing was, the Poconos?
No, that was in, like, the Adirondacks. That was the Catskills.
Oh, well, either way, I'm doing the Pechanga. I'm going to be doing the Pechanga at the end of the show, so come for that. But, yeah, you can find all my dates there at jamiepiercenyc.com, and then you can see all of my other various social media platforms.
It took 341 episodes. I was just trying to get to the point where one of our guests said the word Pechanga. This is now going to be our last episode. This is what I was trying to get to.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for having me, folks. We are no longer so gay. We're just past that now. It's very exciting. Very exciting.
And you know that your theme song is Soap Dish, right?
Of course I do. Soap Dish.
I just wanted to make, I mean, of course you know, but in case no one else knew that, because I saw, my mom took me to see Soap Dish in the theaters.
Oh, I remember.
I'm not saying she was trying to make me gay, but I don't think she was discouraging it either.
It is my favorite movie. I have to tell you, just in terms of all of my sensibilities, it's right near All About Eve. But in terms of modern movies, yeah. And that particular song, for listeners who are wondering, because we play it every week for 7+ years, it is the Makeover Mambo which I think is apropos in so many different ways. Yeah. That's
Oh, I love that.
That's
oh my,
our
I was
show.
Just doing a dub smash about Soap Dish the other day at my mother's behest. I it's such a on the machine, Rose.
On the machine. I used to go to malls in New Jersey, where I'm from, and just go down the escalator and pretend that there were people at the end of the escalator wanting my autograph. There weren't, but I certainly pretended that there were.
I think you should try again. I think you should go there right now and see what happens.
My folks would love that. Paramus Park could be very enjoyable.
I'm sure they would love that.
Well, we enjoy you immensely. You entertain me, Jamie. I love your posts on Facebook. They entertain me. Happy anniversary to you. Any relationship advice for our listening audience?
Be both men.
Okay.
I find that really helps. Being that you have a lot in common if you're both men. You can share clothing. And also, this cold that I got that from him. So you can share bacteria as well. I don't know. I really do think that there is a tremendous advantage to same-sex relationships. I think it does kind of level the playing field, if you will. So that's my relationship advice.
Now, can we turn things around? Do you think that he would offer any different advice? What has he learned?
Oh my gosh. He has learned to just laugh at everything I say.
Nice.
Otherwise, we'll have a fight. Otherwise, I'll get really upset. That was funny. Why aren't you laughing? No, he's absolutely immune to my charms, which I think is a good thing because I don't feel like I have to be on at home, which is nice because, having a very public, being out there and trying to entertain the masses, it's nice to come home and be able to turn off the brain and watch some... Real Housewives.
There you go. There you go. It comes full circle. Everybody, over on Twitter, the handle is JamiePierceNYC, or you can go on over to JamiePierceNYC.com. Wednesday, March 9th, the stand-up comedy special, Theatrical Hysterics. You can go on over to 54below.com and pick up some tickets there. Jamie, what a treat having you on the show.
Ken, you're a peach.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have some time left on this week's episode, so let's get to some of the biggest LGBTQ news that's out there. And our first piece of news is actually focused on that last letter, the Q. Big change over at the Huffington Post. The Huffington Post Gay Voices section has changed its name. They've changed it from HuffPost Gay Voices to HuffPost Queer Voices, and it is quite a topic of conversation out there right now. Let me read a little bit from their announcement. They wrote this: "Today, for the very first time, we're thrilled to welcome you to HuffPost Queer Voices. Our name change comes 4.5 years after we originally debuted as HuffPost Gay Voices, and after countless conversations with countless people, both inside and outside of the HuffPost newsroom. We, like many others before us, have chosen to reclaim queer and to rename the section HuffPost Queer Voices because we believe that word is the most inclusive and empowering one available to speak to and about the community, and because we are inspired by all the profound possibilities it holds for self-discovery, self-realization, and self-affirmation. We also revere its emphasis on intersectionality, which aids in creating, building, and sustaining community while striving to bring about the liberation of all marginalized people, queer or not." HuffPost Gay Voices changing their name to HuffPost Queer Voices. They did acknowledge that there might be some blowback, there might be some resistance. They wrote this, quote, "As ecstatic as we are about our new name, we understand and respect that for some people, queer conjures up incredibly intimate and wholly negative associations and memories. We have no intention of telling anyone what words they should or shouldn't use to define themselves or their community. That's a personal, powerful, and important choice. Our hope, however, is that those who have been hurt by this word or believe it to be solely derogatory can understand how we are employing it and why. And indeed, if you scroll down to the comment section, which is just jumping, it is absolutely jumping. People have some really strong opinions, some very well-liked opinions on there, as in people are clicking the like button. One of them, which has 355 likes in just 24 hours, which is quite a bit in the comment section of a HuffPost article. This is Keith Fry wrote, "I hate this choice. That word is one of the most painful words out there, worse than the F word for me, because it suggests that there is an otherness to LGBT folks that makes them not only odd, but defective. I don't buy the let's reclaim it crap. Some words are meant to be buried, to be referred to as the Q word, just as we refer to the N word. I will not be able to look at your posts any longer without cringing. Thanks a lot." And even Andy Hum, who is the co-host and co-producer at Gay USA, he was on our show a few years back, he wrote this quote, "I know many young people seem to prefer queer, but I don't see black people reclaiming the N word or women the C word. Queer is most often used as a slur, and there are virtually no major LGBT organizations that have changed their names to queer. This is a turnoff, especially for LGBT people struggling to come out and looking for information and resources. That's why we call our national cable TV show Gay USA, so that average people channel surfing will know what it is basically about and tune in. We know it is not wholly inclusive, but it gets people to watch. Queer Voices does not invite people in, and as you can see from the comments, offends many." That's Andy Hum, the co-host and co-producer at Gay USA. Those over at HuffPost Queer Voices have said they respect people's right to disagree with them, but they are proud of their decision. That word pride comes up over and over again in responses. They are proud of their decision and they are not backing down. This is a really tricky one for me. This is a really tricky issue for me. I've written quite a bit for the artist formerly known as HuffPost Gay Voices. For about 3.5 years now, I've been posting on there, and it's been a great vehicle for me, and it's helped me develop my ideas, and hopefully some of the things I've written have helped people articulate their ideas as well, either in agreement or often, you know, in opposition to what I'm putting out there. So to see this announced this week, suddenly if I were to be posting something on that site, you know, if something comes up for me, or I should say, if I try to post something, not everything goes through. It is a juried process in that pieces are read. People think, oh, if you just submit something, it automatically goes on. That's absolutely not true. I've written a couple pieces that have not gone on. But if I have something to say, if I submit and it does indeed get published, or let's just even back up a step. If I choose to submit, I am now no longer submitting a post as a gay voice. I would now be submitting a post as a queer voice. That's not a word that I use. So again, it's a little bit tricky for me. I totally understand this change. I totally understand this move, just as I totally understand that people were going to have a really strong reaction for it. I'm just saying on a selfish personal level, queer is not a word I identify with. I see the power in the word. I see what it does for all different generations. I don't believe that it's just about, oh, this is a word for younger generations. It's actually not true. And I don't know that anybody's actually done research on it, so I think that's just some hypothesizing without some actual data to back it up. And as a professor, I do like there to be a little bit of data for these things. So I see the power in the word. I'm just saying it's not a word I identify with. And it would be a word I have to identify with if I'm choosing to submit my content under that umbrella. There are other pieces too. I think that I would experience a little bit of discomfort. These are my own issues. I feel like you are now being welcomed to therapy with Ken Schneck. So I'm on the couch and you get to just listen to my rants or my own little things going on in my head that I'm now sharing with you. And I'm not paying you for this therapy. In fact, you just kind of have to sit back and listen, or you could tune out, but please don't, because it's not much. But I just will say, I'm a little bit more hesitant to share these pieces with my parents, because I have to explain to them, hey, I am now under this umbrella of Queer Voices, and I think that they're going to have a pretty strong reaction to that. I don't think it's going to be a positive one. I think also professionally for me, I think I've struggled in my career to get some of my places of employment to hype the fact that I publish things under Gay Voices as a faculty member. It's a struggle just to get the institution to publish things that I'm putting in the Huffington Post, because it's not exactly an academic journal. And then you take that one step further and say, oh, it's in the Gay Voices section. And now it is taking it slightly one step further, and it's in the Queer Voices section. So I don't know. I am not against this. I just got to struggle with it a little bit. I got to wrap my mind around it and see what it means to me, because it has been one of my biggest forums other than this show, and I am not changing the show to "This Show Is So Queer," but I guess in some ways it's exactly the same thing, where I'm reclaiming this word gay, or at least this phrase "that's so gay," to mean something that's really positive. So I will continue to wrestle with it. I'm sure this won't stop me from posting, but it certainly gave me a little bit of pause. So Huffington Post Gay Voices, now Huffington Post Queer Voices. So much other news that's out there. Some news from Indiana declaring that there was, quote, no need to have a debate or vote on the issue of civil rights protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Hoosiers. Indiana Senate President Pro Tem David Long this week killed what's come to be known as the deeply flawed Senate Bill 344. The measure, which would have banned discrimination based on sexual orientation but not gender identity and offered broad religious exemptions, was, quote, a controversial attempt at compromising between extending rights for gay Hoosiers and protecting religious liberties. That's according to the Indianapolis Star. President Long told reporters the bill as written could not pass because it did not have enough support from Republican lawmakers who hold the majority in both houses of the legislature, so there was no point in debating it. He promised that lawmakers would take another pass at civil rights legislation for LGBT citizens next year. So there you go. It did not go through there in Indiana. It might have offered some more protections, but didn't even get a debate. More news. This is some news coming at you from the political front. This is really funny. I'm sorry. If you've listened to the show before, you know that I love clever activism. Clever activism is great. I'm not a big fan of petitions. People keep trying the petitions to reverse the blood ban on gay men, which, yes, fine, is not a ban. It's not an outright ban right now on gay men. It's a one-year deferral if you have promised that you have not had sex in the past year. But anyway, a lot of petitions to address the blood ban, and they don't tend to go anywhere. There was a petition, we talked about this a little bit last week, there was a petition to have the Human Rights Campaign re-examine their endorsement of Hillary Clinton. I think that did indeed get the 10,000 signatures they were shooting for, but it didn't really go anywhere. So inspired and clever and creative activism, love it. Love this kind of stuff. And this was one that I want to highlight this week. A pair of college students tricked Ted Cruz and the internet into thinking they were engaged. Arden Jerskies and Kenzie Peach, who are sophomores at Emerson College, they recently faked a marriage proposal in front of the Republican presidential candidate. Calling it a brief demonstration of values and activism, Peach said the intent was to highlight Cruz's hypocritical stance on marriage. She said this, quote, "It's way more ethical to have two people of the same gender get married than have two college sophomores tie the knot." She said this about the act between her and her male accomplice. Cruz, by the way, the winner of the Iowa caucus, Cruz is against same-sex marriage, and he has courted anti-gay evangelical leaders in his quest for the Republican nomination. Recently, fellow GOP presidential hopeful Donald Trump also called him a hypocrite for this stance, which possibly referred to that dinner, which we talked about a million times over last year, that dinner that Ted Cruz had with some gay donors. Well, these two college sophomores devised the plan during a school trip to the Iowa caucuses. While waiting in line to meet Cruz Sunday at a rally, inspiration struck Peach, who thought, "I know what we have to do." She told her compatriot to propose when they reached Cruz. Cruz even played a part in the proceedings. Feigning secrecy, Jerskies asked him for assistance in the proposal. When Jerskies got down on one knee, Cruz placed his hands on both of their shoulders and then embraced them after Peach said yes. "He gave us the biggest hug I think I have ever received in my entire life," Jerskies said. A photo of the moment showing the college students embracing and Cruz cheering went viral and was widely circulated in online media. And yeah, there they go. They were trying to make a point about, hey, this wasn't a real marriage, and you, sir, are against actual marriages. actual marriages. Well, I mentioned that Ted Cruz courts all of these conservative voices. One of the voices that he highlighted this week was Duck Dynasty star Phil Robertson. Duck Dynasty star Phil Robertson took the stage at a Ted Cruz rally in Iowa City last week. And when he took the stage, he had some words about gay marriage. He called marriage equality evil, wicked, and sinful before a cheering crowd. According to the CNN Wire, Cruz enlisted Robertson to secure the evangelical vote in the Iowa caucus, which was very effective, at least insofar as Cruz was able to get the evangelical vote. I don't know that Duck Dynasty star Phil Robertson was the reason for that, but regardless, in a commercial endorsing Cruz, Robertson went duck hunting with Cruz and both donned black face paint. The pitch was essentially, he's one of us. The patriarch of the A&E reality show, who was briefly kicked off it for racist and homophobic remarks, hasn't shied away from that kind of negative language on marriage equality. At the rally, he said this, quote, "Don't you understand that when a fellow like me looks at the landscape and sees the depravity," he said the depravity, "the perversion, redefining marriage and telling us that marriage is not between a man and a woman? Come on, Iowa, it's nonsense, it is evil, it's wicked, it's sinful, and they want us to swallow it, you say? We have to run this bunch out of Washington, D.C. We have to rid the earth of them." There you go. So right after he left the stage, right after Duck Dynasty star Robertson left the stage, Ted Cruz, he didn't address his comments directly, but he called Robertson, quote, this was hilarious. So this guy got up there, right? And he's known as this cantankerous, divisive guy. Ted Cruz gets up there after he said it's evil, it's sinful, it's wicked, all these different things. Ted Cruz called Robertson, quote, a joyful, cheerful, unapologetic voice of truth. There you go. A joyful, cheerful, unapologetic voice of truth. Ted Cruz went on to say, what an extraordinary human being. What a voice Phil has to speak out for the love of Jesus. Joyful, cheerful, unapologetic voice of truth. I think unapologetic. Let's go with unapologetic. I can support that. I'm not so sure about joyful. And I didn't really see anything cheerful. And I certainly don't agree with that voice of truth. So there you go. Hey, let's look overseas. Let's go to India for a second. India's top court is to review a decision that upheld a colonial-era law which criminalizes gay sex, which is a victory for rights campaigners at a time when India is navigating a path between tradition and modernity. The Supreme Court on Tuesday asked a five-judge bench to reconsider its 2013 ruling that only Parliament can change the 1860 law, which imposes a 10-year sentence for gay sex. Lawyer Anand Grover said this, quote, it is definitely a move forward. This is the last legal avenue for campaigners seeking to use the courts to strike down the law. If unsuccessful, any future decisions to lift the ban will rest with politicians who are largely conservative and opposed to the change. So a little bit of hope there in the country of India. A little bit of hope in India that there might be some change there. An anti-gay activist has claimed in a new video that Jesus would have beaten gay people to death. Now, I'm a gay Jew from New Jersey, as I mentioned earlier in the show, but I think I know enough that Jesus wouldn't have beaten gay people to death. In a video posted online shared by Right Wing Watch, Theodore Shubat made the declaration. He said the U.S. military is overrun by that F word, which I can't even use that word. He went on to say he commends Eastern European countries which see gay people beaten in the streets. He said this, quote, when you have the sodomites coming out into the streets and the Christians come up and beat them up, the people who are beating up the sodomites don't get punished because the society is so conditioned that way. It's actually, you know, not true. Not true. But he is known for appearing in an anti-gay documentary, and he regularly airs his anti-LGBT views. Why do I highlight this? Well, I highlight this because this guy gets a lot of traction. And these are the kinds of things that he says. Jesus would have beaten gay people up. Huh. Hey, an exciting story. I love this story. An exciting story in the gaming world. A new video game will give players the chance to play as gay superheroes for the first time. Wiccan and Hulking, who are a popular gay couple and core members of the Young Avengers. That's a superhero team, a Marvel superhero team. They are now playable characters in the latest edition of LEGO Marvel Avengers. The characters feature among hundreds of unlockable Marvel heroes in the new game, in which they can be discovered together in a cave as part of an open-world Manhattan area. Unfortunately, their relationship is not made clear during gameplay. However, fans are still delighted to see the popular gay pair pop up in the game. This is not the first game to feature a same-sex option, storyline, or character. Last year, Mortal Kombat X introduced their first gay playable character to much fanfare. BioWare's Mass Effect series charts the futuristic adventures of Systems Alliance Commander Shepard as he or she, depending on the player's preference, tries to defeat a race of hostile machines. There you go. That series has been praised for featuring a number of gay storylines, including the option to have gay sex in Mass Effect 3. So, in this new Marvel LEGO game, you can play as either Wiccan or Hulking. And at this point, folks who are comic book fans, of which I am one of those people who is a comic book fan, you know that that is a very popular gay couple, core members of the Young Avengers. Now, why do we highlight these two characters that are not necessarily in the mainstream? Because this makes a huge difference. A huge, huge difference all across the world. That gaming world is just millions and millions and millions of people interacting with that gaming world. And for individuals to grow up seeing gay characters, although I'm not sure how much their relationship is made specific in this game, but still, seeing gay characters in comic books or seeing gay characters in this game, it makes a huge difference. It is, in my world, a developmental phase called encountering. And when you encounter people who are different from you, you are able to figure out who you are. Or, hey, if you are someone who's encountering, if you are a gay boy or girl reading, or queer, I should say, according to the Huffington Post, which I support, if you are queer and you are growing up and you see two comic book characters who are gay, it's extraordinarily validating. So kudos to the Marvel Universe for featuring Wiccan and Hulking in this new game. I love it. And that, my friends, is pretty much all the time we have for this week's episode. Our huge, huge thanks to Jamie Pierce. What an absolute treat to have him on the show. He just cracks me up. I want to be best friends with him. I just want to move to New York City, not even to be in New York City, just to be friends with Jamie Pierce. But we call that stalking, and some people don't like that. Please follow him on Twitter, JamiePierceNYC. And hey, follow us on Twitter. This show is so gay. Like us on Facebook. Go out there. Go use your voice to make a difference in this world. However it is that you know how to best use it, whether you are faking a marriage proposal or you are inventing a new video game featuring gay characters, use your voice to lift up the voices of your LGBTQ and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Look into the window of my mind. Reflections of the fears I know I've left behind. I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending.